This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
All right, let's go around the NFL. I'm not going to lie, for a moment, right when I said all right, I was like, damn, am I jumping off sides at the wrong segment?
That's even worse.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I clearly wasn't jumping off sides.
You started pass blocking when it was a run play.
I had that moment where, you know, you clench up. You're like, oh. And I was like, no, I'm good. Yeah. But let's go around the NFL now. We were just talking about it in our question of the day. Saluting Mike Patrick, a legendary ESPN broadcaster who passed away yesterday at the age of 80 years old. He was the inspiration for our question of the day because he was the voice that explained to us for the first time on ESPN the first and 10 line that is kind of interposed over the broadcast that we have become so enamored with. We were asking what are some of the greatest innovations in sports in honor of that. And a few of them that I kind of missed during the segment that I want to circle back around to that y'all talked about, the Skycam. Mm-hmm. And then obviously now we've gotten to a place where we're getting drones even. But getting that different perspective than the just normal broadcast view that we've seen for so long, it was very interesting. Pitch clock is one of the more recent ones.
Yeah.
That has brought the game into a certain speed that is like, really, I think, I don't know that you can, well, you can overstate it, but I feel I don't know that it has necessarily been overstated in how much more accessible it's made the game. It's tougher on these pitchers, I'm sure, with the tempo, but it's made the game a lot more interesting.
Yeah,
instant replay.
Yeah, I mentioned that. I guess it was. I looked it up before I was even born when it came out, but I just remember as a kid marveling at it.
Yeah, but not even just like slow-mo. Like, the idea, hey, we're going to look at this.
Oh, I got you.
Just looking at this again.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And then one that I'm going to mention just because I know it might actually get into my guy Lopez, and it's because Houston, it's a Houston thing. Dome stadiums.
Mm-hmm.
Huge.
No.
Huge.
No, that's,
and retractable even.
That's enormous. I mean, one particular dome. No, I'm not going
to
say.
No, don't do it. Nope. All right, so let's continue around the NFL. And actually, I want to go to Mike Patrick because he has Houston ties in ways because he was on the call for a few important, super important Texans situations. Let's start with the one that isn't as fun, which is the Music City Miracle. He was on the call for that.
Dyson and Bird are deep. Taken by Neal. He gives it to Wycheck. Wycheck, that looked like a forward pass. Taken by Dyson. Dyson's down the sideline. Dyson's going to go all the way. And there is no flag. There are no flags on the play. It is a touchdown, but we need to look at that replay.
Well, all that's missing is the band.
That's right. That's the only thing missing.
That's so good. It was forward, Pat, lateral, but that's okay.
Were you in the stadium for that?
No, I didn't cover
you didn't
that.
Cover that one. You probably watched this copy.
That was a forward pass.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was doing.
You were just yelling at the TV.
Forward pass.
That's exactly what I was doing.
Yes, I thought that was, I mean, it's crazy how loud that was. Mm-hmm. Like, it is crazy just how loud that was.
I like the announcer saying, no flag, no flags.
Yes, you can tell he started out in radio.
Yeah.
It does stink that we have that has to come back around to TV so often that broadcasters can't immediately go to a place of celebration. because you don't have as many of those great calls because you have to be, you have to kind of temper it.
Joe Buck do that a lot, too.
Yeah, he does.
Like a kickoff. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, he's at the 10, the 5. There are no flags.
That's the best part.
Which, that's vital information because I can't see the whole field.
Because sometimes they blow their load in that one little celebration. Hey, they do. They go all out like they won the game.
They're like, oh, wait a minute.
No,
bring
it's
that back.
Flag.
Wait a minute.
Hope
it's
you still got
flag.
Something in the tank. Yeah.
Yep.
All right, so I got that one out of the way so that we can circle back around to the one that I'm sure will make everybody smile. It was the literal first game of the franchise against the Dallas Cowboys, and Mike Patrick called the first touchdown in Texans history.
Cowboys come with 4. Carr with time. Complete down to the 5. Diving for the end zone. Touchdown, Billy Miller. Are you kidding me?
I was there for that one. That's for dang sure. And anyone who's been listening a long, long time, we were playing odds on who's going to, you know, radio odds on who's going to score the first touchdown in Texans history. Billy Miller right here, baby. I called it. Billy Miller. Go back and go back to the archive.
Nobody's going to do it.
Get the tape. Get nobody's the tape.
We're going to have to look that. Let me hit a Mark Vandermeer.
It's on the tape. Actually, I wasn't at this station. But
nobody's going to do it.
It's on the tape. And some of our longtime listeners will remember that. I was like, hey, he did score the first touchdown.
Appreciation to Lady T, who was like, that was the last time the Cowboys scored a touchdown. Hilarious. No, but yeah, this is where I raise my hand and acknowledge that I am still a youth to some degree, because like Mike Patrick's tenure, like all of these things don't hit me in the same way that I think they do for others, because like, I mean, and he worked up until like relatively recently, like within the last decade or so.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, it does not really hit me in that same way as some of the even more modern broadcasters.
I think Mike Patrick had one of the most important roles in college football history. And some of the younger people don't remember this. If you're in your 40s and beyond, you do. He was the first, when ESPN started Thursday night college football, that ESPN initiated that, came up with it. And back in the day, in the late, early 90s and beyond, Thursday night college football was enormous games. It wasn't like, you know, Eastern Michigan versus so-and-so, as you often see now. It was Penn State, Notre Dame. It was, you know, Arkansas and Texas. It was big games on Thursday night. And Mike Patrick was the one that called the majority of those early on. That's what I remember him at first for. Yeah.
All right. So, again, salute to him. Passed at 80 yesterday. Appreciation to a very good career in the sports space. All right, as we continue around the NFL, we are one day away from the NFL draft. And, you know, all the talk is getting real heavy. I would like to start with a little bit of lying season or no lying seasons. All right here, Lopez?
I am good.
I will take you to the Max Crosby podcast. I don't know what it's called, but I mean, there's too many podcasts. I'm sorry. I apologies to Max Crosby. Please don't see me about it. I know you're a big human being that would make me hurt. However, I just don't necessarily know what's happening.
You're from the Dallas area too, ain't he?
I have no idea.
I think so.
I think he is.
Is he?
Yeah.
All right. Shout out to Max Crosby and all that. But on his podcast, he had a guest, a man named Shador Sanders. And he was asked to give his Mount Rushmore of pass catching, passer and catcher duos. And so, I mean, he had, after he put in Brady and Gronk, which that feels like the right answer there. If you're going to have Brady tied with anybody, Brady and Gronk feels right. He went Rodgers and Devontae Adams. That feels like a good answer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember who his third was, but this is who he capped out his Mount Rushmore of those duos with.
Whoever is going to be the quarterback for DK Metcalf and George Pickens, whoever that is.
Gee, I wonder. I wonder what his intent was there.
He giving away game, line season or no line season, Lopez? Is this him telling us that he knows where he's going to go?
No, I don't think he knows where he's going to go, but I do think this is why people talk about his interviews not going well and all this other. I think most of that is made up stuff based off of his public persona, you know? And this is what people kind of eye roll over.
I thought his favorite team was the Browns. Remember he's playing Madden? He says his favorite team is
that's right.
Browns.
He has done that a number of times.
There
was also a time where he was hanging out with his pops, and his pops was kind of basically poking at him about, like, New York, kind of intimating that he would go to the Giants. Are they just doing the thing where they're going to, whatever the mocks are saying, they're just like, hey, this is where he's going to be?
I don't know if it's smart or if it's a little bit embarrassing, a little bit, man.
I think it's more than a little bit embarrassing.
Because it seemed like he's just trying to, hey, team, pick me, please.
Yes.
Pick me, please.
Yes.
It seemed like he just want to go wherever he's wanted.
No, I totally agree. And I think this is where people get that. It just rubs people the wrong way.
It's interesting because
Montana to Rice, by the way, is the right answer.
Ah, oh, yeah.
I mean, it's not even close. It's not even close.
That is a
I have
really
no argument with that.
Yeah. That is a great one.
Yeah.
If you were
just
gonna,
ask your dad. Yeah. Ask your dad
you
about
ain't
that.
Guy ask him. Hey, yeah. I wasn't even around during that time, and yeah. I could have told you that.
Now I'm thinking about like the other potential duos that you could throw up there. Like you could put
put Brady DeMoss.
That's what I was thinking,
you
but it,
put,
I know it's only
how,
short lived.
I was like, how much longevity do you need there? But yes, that was
legendary, man.
that was one of those where it was like, oh yeah, this can go to a different level. It's like, yeah Brady's pretty good, and it was like, oh, well, I can throw to Randy Moss.
Yeah,
just throw it up there, man. It'll go very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so there's that, but then there's also other news when it comes to around the NFL as we head towards the draft, and one of them has to deal with the number five selection in this NFL draft. Do you know who's selecting number five, Lopez? I like doing this, although I probably should stop because it doesn't.
Who's selecting number five? I can tell you right now. That would be, off the top of my head, that would be Jacksonville.
That's right. It is the Jacksonville Jaguars. And
are they going to get a running back? Tell me it's not going to be Ashton Gentry.
Mason Graham had been talked about a ton at this. He's been mocked a ton, right? Yeah. Getting them an interior defensive line, a defensive tackle. But there's a little bit of a talk about the possibility of something else, that somewhere else that they can go. This is Jeremy Fowler, I believe, talking about what the Jags might do at five.
I'm hearing that Genty is in play for the Raiders among a few options. They're also looking at offensive tackle potentially, but there's some momentum around the Raiders and Genty. I'm told Genty would love to play for the Raiders. They are atop his wish list as far as what the player wants. We'll see what the team wants, but this is an option that clearly will go somewhere in the top 10 to 12. I haven't talked to one team who thinks he would slip out of that range. In fact, Jacksonville at number five could be a sleeper option for Genty as well.
Yeah, and we've seen that mock association happen a couple of times with some mock drafts of Genty to five. There's that, but then also Fowler went further to say one GM that he spoke to thinks wide receiver isn't off the table for Jacksonville in the first round, so that they could pair Brian Thomas Jr. with someone like Tetairoa McMillan. Which one of those scares you more as an opponent that will have to face the Jaguars? The idea of adding a high-level wide receiver two to go along with that, because they do still need wide receiver in some ways, or the blue-chip running back in Ashton Genty?
In a bubble, I would say Ashton Genty. I think he's going to be so good in the NFL. But let me just reiterate, don't worry about the Jaguars.
You're holding steady to that, huh?
Don't worry about the Jaguars.
Okay. All right.
I hope you're right, man.
The magnificent Gladstone and everything else and Duval and all that stuff. Nah. Don't worry about the Jaguars.
Another duo that came in, they said Large Benjamin and Antonio Brown. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if I put that nearly as high, but I see what you're doing there. That was definitely a terrifying matchup there. All right. This is something that's kind of going forward, but ESPN kind of has been the home of the NFL draft for a very long time, and there's been kind of talk around the NFL about the possibility of, like, I mean, clearly they're building up this product to then bring it back to the market and see if they can drive up the price again and shopping it out. According to John Allerand of Puck, ESPN, quote, appears likely to renew an agreement with the league and to continue to broadcast the draft. It's been 46 years and counting. And so ESPN's optimistic that it remains with ESPN. Obviously, there's the simulcast, or the association with the NFL Network and such. But it feels like this is where it'll stay. However, it also feels like ESPN or the NFL would really like this to go a lot more into the regular broadcast TV as opposed to remaining simply in the cable space, right?
You know what's funny about ESPN and the draft? And you said 46 years, which is amazing. I really don't. It's not one of those products that I associate immediately with ESPN anymore. Like, remember the SEC on CBS?
Yes.
Like, that kind of hurt my heart, because it's just like, man, it's the SEC on CBS. I don't have that same feeling with the draft in ESPN, maybe it's because it's on NFL Network, because ABC, the actual ABC does a lot
of it. That's true. They do simulcast that as well.
So it doesn't hit me, the same way as some of these other associations do.
All right. So, yeah, I just found that to be interesting that ESPN seems like, and it does seem like it's a large part of what ESPN does this time of year, is just having having all that conversation, as a lot of programs, or rather networks will, but it's a little bit different when you have that partnership with the league. All right, a couple more things before we go. Brock Purdy showed up to voluntary offseason workouts, and we know that they're still trying to hammer out a deal for him going forward on whether he will continue to be the quarterback beyond his tenure there, his rookie contract, and if he does, at what cost. We talked a little bit about that. But then also, George Kittle did not show up to voluntary workouts, and that speaks a little bit because they supposedly remain far apart on the possibility of a new contract, and he's entering the final year of his deal. And it, like, we've talked about this in some ways, but it does feel like the Niners are getting to this point where they might not be able to hold this thing together in the way that they to remain at the top of the NFC.
I mean, yes, but I feel like this is going to be worked out. Like, they're going to pay Purdy. I think we can all almost, even if we don't necessarily agree with it, the premise of it, I think they're going to. And if they do that, they have to pay George Kittle. I mean, it's not even a choice. You got to figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
So this whole far apart thing, that's a lot of times that's just agent talk and stuff like that. You know?
Well, yeah. He's doing the things where he tries to apply pressure.
Yeah.
Voluntary workouts. I will not volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
You will not see me. So we'll see if that necessarily.
That's going to tick off Kyle Shanahan.
I volunteer to not go.
Yeah, that's right. We'll see how much it upsets. I feel like in his position, with how comfortable he is with the offense, he's been there for a long time. Clearly, he understands how it works. Him not being at voluntary workouts, I feel like that's probably not the biggest deal. But if it sends a message to the organization that, hey, let's get this done, I'm sure that
wait till CJ start not volunteering for volunteer workout.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, brother.
This station's going to blow up.
Yes, it will.
Don't make me think about that till we have to get there.
Yeah. Oh, he's just another Aaron Rodgers. Yeah.
Well, I don't know that we'll ever say that in particular. And if we do, I kind of want to see what would have to happen for us to liken C.J. Stroud to Aaron bleeping Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, boy, that would be quite a roller coaster to get there. All right, and real quick before we go, I did want to throw out the weirdest and most niche stat that I saw yesterday. So Pope Francis passed on Sunday on Easter. And with his passing, only one team from the NFL, NBA, and MLB, those three leagues, did not make the playoffs during his papacy. This. What team is it, John Lopez?
From all three leagues, just one.
Between the NFL, the NBA, and the MLB, there was one team that did not make the playoffs at any time during his papacy.
When did he start? Oh, it was like about 10. He hadn't been there that long, about 10 years? 12 years? Something like that?
That is, I really should know what the actual date is.
It's not necessary.
It was 2013, March 13th of 2013.
Yeah, so 12 years. I figured it was about that long. So I'm going to have to say, not make the playoffs?
It probably also, to give you a hint, remember what segment we're putting this in.
Yeah, it's got to be the Cleveland Browns.
It is not!
No?
They were just in the playoffs.
Oh, that's right. The Browns were just in the playoffs.
They were in the playoffs here!
Yeah.
All right, would you like one more guess, or should I turn it over to Figgy to give you the answer?
Who is it, Figgy?
J-E-T-S, oh, Jess.
Of course. Yeah.
They suck.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Man, they've been really bad,
They're so bad. Yeah. They're so bad.
Goodness gracious. I didn't realize it had been that long they haven't been in the playoff.
Last time was, wasn't it Mark Sanchez? It was the Sanchez out there.
I think
Yeah. So, best of luck, Aaron Glenn. You got your work cut out for you, brother. Mm-hmm. All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next. Yesterday we talked about the idea of the Astros win on Monday being the best win of the season. Did we get the best sign of the Astros season yesterday? Let's talk about that next. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Astros get another win, so that's a back-to-back once more.
Hey, they're above 500, baby.
Yeah, I think I misspoke yesterday when I was saying that they were back at 500. I think I might have said above 500. I was just never wrong, just early. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't wrong. I was just early. I was getting ready for the win that they had yesterday. 5-1 victory over the
Toronto Blue Jays.
Blue Jays. Yeah. I almost said Padres, and I was like, that was this weekend, Reginald. Get with the times. And it was indeed the Toronto Blue Jays.
That's right. I said Browns earlier.
You sure did. But yeah, man, the Blue Jays also, like, Chris Bass had been their best pitcher, man.
0.77 ERA.
Crazy good ERA. That's a lot larger now.
Yeah.
Thanks to, not just a lot larger, but at least it is larger now because of a really solid game from a few people. Jeremy Pena with the three-hit day. Christian Walker coming back off a day off, having a three-hit day. Appreciate you, big fella.
He said, y'all ain't about to make me lose my job.
Ain't no Wally Pip happening around here, brother.
I heard that conversation going in the loop.
No, you are absolutely right. I mean, let's wrap up with the initial thought.
No, go ahead. Like, I was just kind of highlighting some of the things that happened in that victory. Ronel Blanco, two hits in seven innings of work. That's the best way of saying that. Was this the bet? What were the good signs? And was there a best sign of the season in this one?
It got me thinking, because yesterday you brought it up and we were talking about, was that the Astros' best win? You know, and it was hard to argue. But after I'm watching this game, I'm like, this might be the best sign. And there is a difference. The best sign of things you like to see.
Because it opened up your eyes.
Yeah, that could be.
You saw the sign.
Sort of a trend, something that could.
It took you a while to get the ace base there, didn't it?
Something that could, you know, maybe, you know, you build on and they continue. Like that we might have seen the best game. I thought yesterday was the best sign. And you guys, and Figgy in particular, just touched on a couple of the reasons why. Jeremy Peña.
Hey.
Like, we were asking the question in training camp, preseason, spring training, I should say.
It gets me every time.
Is he going to be able to respond and have the kind of year, especially with the absences of, you know, Bregman and Tucker, et cetera, to step up? The signs we've seen from Jeremy Peña lately are absolutely yes. He made two terrific plays defensively yesterday. I want to say he only has one error all season. He's that leader on the defense. He's the heart of the defense. The over the shoulder kind of hop it in the air catch that he made was outstanding. But I think the other deep, you know, shot to his left was even an even better play. And then he's hitting, you know, three hits, you know, being able to do it. That's the sign we need. And he's been doing it a lot more lately. And then, Fig, you mentioned Christian Walker. This is a dude. He's always been a leader. You know, we've talked about that. He's always been extremely durable. He's one of those guys that, you know, demands that the manager puts him in the lineup every day. Outside of an injury season last year, he's always played 155, 160. You know, he just is always on the field. So when they sat him, don't think for a second that that didn't resonate and at least, you know, kind of get him going in one way or another, you know? So and then he goes and gets three hits.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. I thought that was encouraging, especially because I wasn't certain that Christian Walker was going to play yesterday.
Right. Well, he wasn't. Well, he might have played, but DeZenza was going to play.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. But, you know, he had a little bit of a thumb thing that kept him out. Supposedly, according to Joe Espada, he will play today. In fact, he said he will start today. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to see what DeZenza can, if he can continue what he had on Monday, which was a fantastic game. But that was super encouraging because Christian Walker, it looked like that day off allowed him to kind of shake off some of the I don't know what the pressures
was,
or what stresses or whatever you want to say that it was on him. And this feels like it's opening things up. And yes, 8-3-2, I agree with you. They said it felt like they also left some runs out there as mm-hmm. well. Like back-to-back games of the offense looking like it did some things, having some, you know, some crooked numbers mm-hmm. on the scoreboard, as they say, particularly early on. Like they got in there early. You know, and I think I was texting it to you guys mm-hmm. earlier. It's just like everything's coming up Milhouse to reference The Simpsons. And it very much feels like they're finding their stride in where the offense is coming around. We knew we'd get there, but it was just the rough time to go through a rough stretch to start. Mm-hmm. And now you're starting to see some of this come around in a way that feels really palatable and really doable, honestly.
And then there's Ronel Blanco. You know,
yes.
Let's just be honest. The old trust your eyes thing. He wasn't as dominant by any stretch as Hunter Brown was the day before. He really wasn't. But the stat line looked like he was. You know, he had some moments where, you kind of feel like, maybe it's because he sweats so much, I don't know, but you kind of feel like he's laboring out there a little bit and really having to battle, as they like to say in baseball. But you look up and only gave up two hits.
Yes.
You look up and he's gone seven innings. It's like he as a number
or two and six and two thirds, because I forgot Brian King came in and got that final out of the seven.
But still, like, he was not the dominant presence that we saw with Hunter Brown. He wasn't the ace, but man, he sure, you know, put up good numbers. And as a number three pitcher, that's a sign that you want to see.
And you see, he's the number three pitcher right now. But I feel like if you were to reorganize your starting rotation, especially the way that Wesneski has kind of come on early, like mm-hmm. he'd be 4-5 and your starting pitcher, pitching has been, it's evidence that your starting pitching has been really good for you.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see that the offense is coming around a little bit to help this get a little bit stronger. Can I throw this up here, though?
Mm-hmm.
Because Chandler Rome, in, you know, obviously covering the team, he wrote an interesting piece that details that the Astros seemingly are now, with how good Cam Smith has been early, are exposing him to center field and possibly playing there. And I know that Jake Meyers has been solid enough. He's batting 269, although he didn't have any hits yesterday and actually had three strikeouts, unfortunately for him. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he's been batting pretty solid. However, I don't know how many people look at that as fully sustainable over the length of an entire season. I kind of love the idea.
How come? Because I was curious.
Cam Smith getting some center field reps and possibly.
What do you
becoming,
do with Jake Meyers?
I mean, Jake Meyers is still going to. I think he's still going to hold down that position. But one thing I think about Cam Smith is he's looked pretty natural playing mm-hmm. right field. Especially we talked about. I know that you were kind of griping about mm-hmm. some of the
learning curve.
Analytics of yeah. no not the oh, analytics oh, oh, but the okay. analytics of oh well this is 75% of the time yeah. it's a catch or what have you, some of those things, but. What those have given us a little bit of an insight into is the jump that he's getting in right field mm-hmm. with the ball off the bat has been good. He's been taking good routes. The places where you've seen some levels of issues is like the corner in right field yeah. where, you know, where the ball bounces and having that issue. That doesn't show up as much in center field mm-hmm. for him. Mm-hmm. And the athleticism and that ability to use his speed in center field shows up more. And those are the things that he's excelled at early in like an outfielder type yeah. space. And so I kind of like the idea of putting him in that space and using the yeah. youth and the athleticism and the speed that he has mm-hmm. in that grand space that he have. Of course, especially if his bat is going to come along and start displaying mm-hmm. the ways that we know Cam Smith or that we believed Cam Smith could impact offensively as well.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. You know, use your speed. Don't worry about, you know, that what juts out in down the right field line and playing the angle in the corner and all that stuff. I do think it's interesting though, because there has to be some sort of DeZenzo effect here too.
I think that's also another right? part of this is that maybe that's where you get some more at bats for DeZenzo.
Yeah.
Because DeZenzo was also playing some right field, mm-hmm. although I mean he's picked up, he's basically your second first baseman, right? When Christian Walker's not there. He's played third base. Somebody asked yesterday on the Jim Allard, the Texas Hammer text line, what DeZenzo's original position was. And I had a hard time remembering because of the way that the Astros bring up
yeah.
their prospects, having them play all sorts of everywhere. But he's played third. He's played first. He's played in the corner spots mm-hmm. in the outfield. And so I think you can maybe find him even more opportunities. And it just allows you to be more malleable, something that we know yeah. the Astros value, especially if Cam Smith can slide into center field. If and when... maybe the Jake Meyers bat isn't as tenable.
See, that's a
when
factor.
when you're looking at yeah. trying to make sure that you have the best bats on the field.
No, I think that's a factor as well. You know, obviously everybody's thrilled at what we're seeing out of Jake Meyers, but I mean, look at his career. You know, he's not this guy offensively, and so maybe you're sort of covering your bases, so to speak. In that case, I do like it, but all these signs that we're seeing, and we saw yesterday. I mean, keep in mind they have one of the best pitching staffs, you know, top to bottom in terms of starting rotation. They have one of the best bullpens, top to bottom. There was some more signs yesterday. Hader, no problem. You know, Abreu, no problem.
Yeah.
You got to have those two things.
We've not talked enough about yeah. how Josh Hader has brought this thing around to mm-hmm. where it's looking pretty good. Like, that, there was yeah. no sweat within that. And I guess maybe that's some of the Hader thing at times is – When you got the run support and it's not as dicey,
yeah.
he shows all of his capabilities. And sometimes it gets a little dicey, and then you have to, you know, kind of tug at your neckline
yeah.
a little bit
yeah.
at times. But this was one of the great Hader outings, 100%. From the 281 on the text line, they have to cover Altuve when it comes to playing whoever you play in center field. Can't have two inexperienced guys side by side. I hear that, and I understand that thought process. I don't know that this is an immediate or it shows its immediate effects, right? I think
yeah.
that this is something that they're exposing him to and trying to walk him through, and I think that they're going to handle this definitely slower than immediately throwing him in the right field. However, he's already, like, the learning curve on this, he's jumped it pretty quickly mm-hmm. to looking very smooth in the outfield, and I do wonder if that helps him, right, when it comes to, I know when we're talking about experience, some of that when it comes to Jake Meyers is he just got great range. You know who's seeming to show the ability to have great range? Cam Smith.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think everything that we're seeing right now, and the division's right there. I think you have probably the best bullpen and pitching staff, you know, in terms of the combo in the division, and you're starting to get these things going. It was the Astros are starting to do things, not to be overwhelming in 2019, 2022 Astros, but certainly doing things that are positive and keep this thing going.
It's good. We can anytime we can ward off some of the. Mm-hmm. Some of the skepticism and the negativity that can jump up when you're in those rough stretches of the season. That's great. 12-11 Astros, mm-hmm. two games behind those Rangers who are 14-9. And another game today. I believe it's at 6. later on today when the Astros finishing off a series against the Blue Jays. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, let's get into what's popping on the day, including could this possibly ruin college football? I'll tell you what it is next. Yeah, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. I have no idea what this message means on the YouTube, Joseph. I need you to explain yourself. But let's get into what's popping here in the loop. We were just talking about the Astros getting above 500, 12-11, two games back of the lead in the AL West. Worth noting, only team with a positive run differential in the AL West right now as well. That was an interesting note. But yeah, shout out to, again, Jeremy Pena, Christian Walker, having three hit days themselves, and then Ronald Blanco being really good on the mound. For 6 2/3, only allowing two hits, one earned run, and like as we said, a victory for the Astros.
Why not? I mean, it seems like they're if they're going to start to make a little move, they're doing all the right things right now, and then they have they come back with the Twins.
I think they
come back with the Twins, so they're in a good spot right now.
Yeah, definitely in a good spot, and mostly because it seems like the bats are starting to go. See if they can have their first official win streak, because they got one back to back games
streak.
They'll be going 6:40 p.m. today against the Blue Jays to finish out a 3-game set. Seeing if you can get a nice sweep on the Jays. It'll be Ryan Gusto.
Royals. They play the Kansas City Royals at Kansas City.
Yeah, so
on Friday.
Ryan Gusto tonight on the mound for your Astros. Some other things that are popping. Game 2 of Rockets Warriors tonight at Toyota Center, 8:30 p.m. Central Time, 9:30 Eastern. So don't let that one trick you up and come into the game around halftime like, "Yo, I missed it." Mm-hmm. No, 8:30 p.m. It'll be on TNT and on Space City Home Network as all the first round games, except for I think game 3 as of right now, is going to be on ABC on Saturday. But other than that, those games will all be locally broadcast as well, thanks to the way the NBA works.
But this is the last year, right? That's what's weird about this, you know.
On TNT?
On the local. I think after this year, playoff games are not going to be broadcast on local.
I didn't notice. I didn't hear that.
Yeah, so enjoy Ackerman and Ryan Hollinshead while you can.
Yeah, actually getting to do playoff games. Wow, okay, did not realize that. So, yeah, definitely going to try and enjoy that much more so. Excited to see what this looks like. We'll talk about this more later on in the show, but I know that Kelly Eco of The Athletic, we talked to him last week. One of the things he was positing is maybe getting the ball into Amen Thompson's hands a little bit more in this game, or is that something that you want to see?
Well, of course, you always want to see that and like to see it, but I think it's Jalen Green and Shengun. You can't overthink. I love what Amen can do, obviously defensively especially. He can do some things and get some places that other athletes just can't get to on the offensive side, but it's Jalen Green and Shengun. It's got to be one of those two guys.
Yeah, and hopefully picking up the pace.
Or both.
Yeah, picking up the pace on some of these actions as well to, maybe see if you can create a little bit of havoc for the Warriors. Excited to see if the Rockets can tie the series at one game apiece tonight before they head off to San Francisco for games 3 and 4. Some other things that are popping, and speaking of the Rockets, I forgot to mention this, neglected to mention this, because the NBA conducted drawings to break some tiebreakers for teams that had identical records a couple days ago. There's a few of them that happened, but the most notable is the tie between the Suns and the Trailblazers. Obviously, the Rockets have control of that Suns pick as of right now, and they get the benefit of that tiebreaker. So the Suns won it. They have the 9th lottery position over the Portland Trailblazers, 10th. It doesn't really change the odds of moving up into the top 4. That remains the same. However, what that does do is if neither of those teams move up in the lottery into that top 4 picks, then the Rockets or the Suns pick that the Rockets have control of would be ahead of the Trailblazers pick, which, I mean,
that's pretty big.
It's an interesting thing, and I think
you have another option to pick from,
right?
Even if you don't move.
Yeah, so that was a good thing. Another good thing that happened for the Rockets this week. Some other things that are popping. Simone Biles apparently is leaving the door open for the 2028 Olympics.
How are we feeling about this? She's going to be, this was on CBS Sports, she was interviewed by L'Equipe, which is a French
sports publication.
Sports magazine. Yeah. And she basically said, I do have the quote here, and that's what makes it interesting to me, because basically she left the door open, but her quote, tell me how this hits you guys, because she was talking about to the French. It was translated, of course, into France, but I'm sure the guy knew, or girl knew the language well enough. I can't find it right now, but how do we feel about her being 31 in the LA Olympics? And that's the wild card. It's in Los Angeles, so it would be a little more tempting for her.
Yeah, I was like, I guess just to kind of put on for the country, I feel like if you talk about narrative arc of what she has, I feel like she's proved it, right? Like, mm-hmm. she's taken this
31
fairly. I don't think that there are many.
There's nothing
at
else
all.
To prove,
especially no. in gymnastics that went to what was 27, I guess, if I'm doing my math, or 28 when she did it. When she competed,
27
last, or 27, yeah. right when she last competed. Mm-hmm. There's not very many gymnasts who get to that place and compete at the highest level in the way that she did, mm-hmm. in winning medals and such. I think she's already established herself as like the GOAT of gymnastics in that way. She has a number of, you know, moves named after her, as is the custom when you are the first person to do something. Mm-hmm. They name it after you. She's got a number of those. She does, like, I don't know what more she would have to prove besides just wanting to do it. And yet and still, because she is so good, I believe she could do it.
But here's the thing.
I believe she could do it.
I'm interested because I will you know, speculate. I will say, in my mind anyway, the wear and tear on her body at age 31 is probably at least as much, if not more, than like a running back. 31 is, I mean, the pounding on the knees and the ankles and the legs,
it's,
and the hips.
It's a reason why you don't see, you know, gymnasts like that at that age, mm-hmm. just still going crazy like
because
that.
Because it's not just what we see on TV. It's days and hours and long days of just landing. And that's why their growth plates when they're young are always crushed and they never grow very tall and all that other stuff. But I found the quote. She says, whether on the apparatus or in the stands, I still don't know. But she did say, the other day we were sprinting in the garden with friends and I had aches and pains for 3 days.
Oh, okay. All right.
I honestly don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, okay. you don't have to do this. Ain't nothing to prove to us. Also, and I don't know if this is like the way that you want to view the highest level competition, especially mm-hmm. when you're out there competing on a world stage for the flag, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. However, you don't want to give nobody else a shot? You know what I mean? Like,
let somebody else eat a little bit.
Hey, it's got to be someone like, hey, let me make the team. How about that?
Yeah. It seems like they got a solid squad too, man.
They do. Like, let Suni Lee and Jordan Childs or whoever else ends up being the next
great. Yeah.
Let them come through and have a little bit of shine too, Miss mm-hmm. Simone. We know who you are and we know how good you are as well, especially because you don't need to, you know, push through and make yourself pay. Like, you did it. You did it all. You got you winning. You got your monies, like, do what you got to do.
Yeah,
but see, if she do it and she do what she did last time, then there's no debate for a long time.
Oh, there's
man.
No debate right now.
I'm saying, if she do the same thing coming up,
yeah,
we might as well stop the whole debate thing for a long time.
Well, she might.
Because somebody have to be 31 years old or whatever the age may be to even be in that conversation.
Yeah, and she might end up in the conversation of greatest athlete ever.
I mean,
period.
You can probably make some level of argument for that right now, but it definitely would show up in a different way, mm-hmm. if she competed and was able to continue to kind of medal in the way that she has in the past outside of the which Olympics was that where she had the twisties pop
that was
up
16,
on her.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
17?
Yeah.
Something like that? No, no. 2021. It was
the 2020 Olympics. That came out. Yeah. Okay. So is this going to ruin college football as we continue in what's popping? So, you know, people seem to like the 12-team playoff for the most part, right? And all of that. However, it seems like there's a possibility, according to Brett McMurphy of the Action Network, does a great job covering college football. He reported that the conference commissioners would, quote, have in-depth discussions regarding the structure of the 12-team format, and it seems like there's a possibility that TV ratings could be a criteria that factors in for automatic CFP bids. Like, we're going to the place that everybody was concerned about, right?
Absolutely, and it's a horrible,
this is a bad sign,
it's a
man.
Horrible place to
Goodness
go.
Goodness gracious!
Basically, you're going back in time. you know, when people were, when voters determined the I'm talking about before the college football playoff in its original form, before what was the other thing? The
FBS? Was it FBS?
It was called like the,
what are you talking about?
Like, you're going back to like polling.
Oh, BCS. Yeah.
BCS. That's BCS what I was thinking of.
How quickly you've forgotten the BCS.
You're going before that even. You're going back to when voters are saying like, well, I like Miami. Well, I like Notre Dame. Well, what about Boise State? Nah.
Yeah.
You know, because of the brand, you know?
Now Alabama going to be in it regardless. Yeah,
exactly.
And they could be having an awful year.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, to be fair, right, the model supposedly, and I'll let me go ahead and just read this verbatim. Mm-hmm. One possibility which could be viewed as a compromise is having conferences earn automatic bids through their play each season, a model in which each Power 5 league can earn guaranteed spots through a combination of its teams, overall records, mm-hmm. and maybe even TV ratings could be presented. The highest ranked conferences would then earn the most automatic bids.
You just can't put TV ratings in there, period. You just can't do it. That goes against, like I said, you're going back in time. That goes against everything that this is supposed to do.
Y'all not even focus on the competition at this point. Y'all focus about the ratings.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in theory, and again, to be as fair as I can, like supposedly that would be like or at least the way that I read it, it'd be a small addition into like
but again,
how
the
conference
shouldn't
competes.
Even be
yeah.
a factor.
But it feels like you say we're going back, and I hear you on that. But in some ways, it's like going forward to what I was always kind of thinking as this sport continued to, I guess, more formally professionalize. We get closer and closer to like having an NFL light where you have probably like your two conferences with maybe like 40 teams and they end up being the real true kind of league and everybody else is kind of this pseudo league in a way that actually
we're there kind of. I mean, obviously
kind of. And it seems like there's some people to tie this into something else that has been in the news. Eddie George, who is the new head coach at Bowling Green. It seems like there's reporting that he's been kind of recruiting and selling Bowling Green as almost a feeder system into Ohio State. Obviously, he has those ties there. And, you know, you can talk about Bowling Green and the geography there that fits in there. Could we see kind of like a almost like a feudal system or a tier system, almost minor league kind of like where you have your, I don't know what the right, non-power conference teams then having kind of associations with bigger teams in the way that like the G League or minor league baseball has, and does that push us further towards that in the same ways that what I was talking about with the kind of rankings factoring into playoffs?
Kind of, sort of, but I think it's more this. Let's use Ohio State as an example, the one you brought up. Let's say Ohio State.
Yeah, this is your fault, Figgy.
This is your fault.
You and your people doing this.
But I think you'll agree, like if you're Bowling Green and you are a five-star, you know, four-star, five-star wide receiver, and Ohio State's bringing back three starting wide receivers, Eddie George can say, hey, you can play every game here. You can play every game here. And when that guy graduates or goes to the NFL, you're going to go to Ohio State. That's what I think it is. It's like he's not, it's not like for the two-star and three-star, we can develop you and it's a feeder system. No, there might be some of that.
Yeah.
It's for the guys that want to play.
But my thing
immediately.
Is, but if that five-star, four-star person rather go to another bit school rather than Bowling Green.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that is probably for the lower star players, though.
No, I think
they
want
to eventually go to Ohio State.
Yeah, I think
I don't know if the five star player is going to go to Bowling Green, to be honest.
No, what I'm saying is, hell, Dion did it at Jackson State. Like, you know, he said, we're gonna take care of you. We're gonna make you get you ready for the NFL, and then we're gonna move on. You know, because he knew he wasn't gonna stay at Jackson State.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. So I don't know. I found those to be interesting in the college football space. Some things that are talked about when it comes to moving this thing forward. And it just feels like everything is pushing towards this thing kind of maybe not even fully contracting, but contracting in ways where I guess the most important in the sport continue to get bigger. And some of the ones that are considered maybe less important have some of that shine shrunk, which kind of feels counterproductive to what the expanding of the playoff ultimately was supposed to be, or at least sold to be.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. That's what's popping here. In the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, C.J. Gardner-Johnson talked yesterday, in addition to some other Texans. Is he bringing the Texans franchise something that they have never had? I'll tell you what we mean next.